Welcome to the newest edition of AZ Politicast. I'm Steve Goldstein. Thanks so much for tuning in. My guest today is C. Owen Papke. He's author of the book, The Purple Presidency. We'll talk about what happened with No Labels not being able to find a unity ticket to take on President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump, and what that could mean for the country and solving some of our urgent problems. Owen Papke coming up right after this. Owen, I want to start off with, when we first met, it was because of the Purple Presidency, but also your connections and involvement with No Labels. We found out recently that No Labels has decided not to field a ticket. And I know there's a lot to that. I want to see if you can provide some insights for us. And in part, I realize it can be difficult. You have to find the right candidates, but the conditions under which No Labels was going to field the presidential ticket, they're still obviously in existence. We're going to have Donald Trump against Joe Biden, which seems like most of the country doesn't want. So ultimately, what led to No Labels having to bow out at this point?
I'm sure there's parts of the story that neither you nor I will ever know, but the superficial and if you will, proximate cause was they couldn't get someone who they viewed as a credible candidate to run. They apparently pitched more than apparently. I personally know that they pitched a number of very prominent people on the prospect of running for a presidency with them providing the ballot line. And some of those discussions got very far down the road, but none of them reached completion.
At this point, at least, we still have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. out there. And of course, the debate on all the talk shows is whether he would take more or any votes from the right or the left. I suppose there are arguments for both. What do you make of him as a candidate? Credible otherwise? Is he going to fit in that word that many people really despise, which is spoiler?
Let me take the last first. A spoiler, that term has been way overused in the course of all this discussion. A spoiler is somebody with no chance to win, but who favors one candidate or another, clearly. He might fit into that category. Certainly nobody that No Labels considered would have fit in that category. They were basically chosen to draw from both sides. We don't know about RFK. As you say, he's a somewhat odd individual. He's had an interesting background, we could put it that way. By his choice of a vice presidential running mate who has been active in Democrat, progressive causes, there is some reason to believe that they would be more inclined to draw from among Democrats than from among Republicans. So I think there's a spoiler potential there. Going back to the question of RFK, I don't view him as a credible presidential candidate of the kind, for example, that No Labels was seeking. He's a gadfly and he's somewhat quixotic, and he's done some things in his life that are admirable and some that are really questionable. And, I think he's a very viable protest candidate for somebody who wants to vote for somebody to prove that they really don't like what the Republicans and the Democrats are offering. RFK on its face today looks like the most credible choice. But as a, person who's going to end up in the White House, we don't even know how many ballots he's going to be on. So
how is the system controlled by the parties so messed up at this point that we did end up with this, that a majority of Americans do not want to see this matchup? Why are we still here anyway?
Well, so many of those boil down to the primaries, and the primaries do not produce a representative sample at all of voters for the purposes of choosing candidates. And the result is that we tend to get more extreme candidates. And frankly, the parties make an effort to rig, and that's a loaded word, and maybe I could come up with something better, but rig the system in favor of their favored candidate. I mean, when the Republicans go winner take all in substantially all of their Republican primaries, that's obviously hugely beneficial for Donald Trump, because if it's one running against seven, I can pretty much assure you that the one will get more votes than any one of the seven. And under those circumstances, he might get 30 or 35% of the vote, as happened over and over again in 2016, and get all of the delegates. So that was obviously a measure that was designed to support Donald Trump instead of being sort of neutral as among the Republican candidates. Same thing on the Democratic side. They suddenly decided that New Hampshire wouldn't be the first primary anymore because Joe Biden doesn't run strong in New Hampshire. There wasn't any other possible reason for that. Why would they put South Carolina first, the state in the union that basically launched Biden's successful candidacy in 2016? It's pretty transparent.
There seems to be momentum across the country, including in Arizona, to change the primary system in some way. But this is not a quick process. I mean, even if you have a lot of momentum, there are many people in the two major parties who benefit from the status quo. I will phrase it this way: are you optimistic that dramatic change can be seen in our primary system without there being some horrible event? I mean,
Well,
it seems to me that having these two candidates is somewhat earth-shaking, but most people in positions of power don't want to see it that way because it still benefits them to have these two, I suppose.
yes, I mean, you stole my line there,
Sorry
Steve,
about that.
because I was about to say, I don't know what could be any more earth-shattering or scary than what we're seeing right now. And I think that's, what are there, six states, seven states, active measures ongoing to try to change this. The problem is exactly as you pinpointed at the beginning. It is a very slow process. And for example, not one of these things can make any difference in 2024. That ship has sailed. And yet those efforts were being contemplated last year and the year before that. So it is a slow process. The parties are generally quite effective at opposing them. In reality, you can't get them through legislatures very often, so it has to be done by some kind of a referendum procedure. And that's hard and that's expensive. And you're seeing that in Arizona. I think the Arizona effort has a good chance of success. I support it. But I'm afraid personally that some of the problems that this country faces are more urgent than that solution can possibly solve. And there's very prominent people who disagree with me. I know Charlie Whelan, who was an author of one of the first real, well, it was called The Centrist Manifesto. It was a great book, and he was way ahead of everybody on this. And he thinks that this is, whether it's moving quickly enough or not, it's the only viable solution. So it's the one we have to pursue. I wish him all the luck in the world. I support the Arizona effort, but I do think that there's a real need for more urgent measures.
Is the system set up in such a way that we don't even know who the best leaders may be? Because a great portion of our electorate doesn't really pay that much attention based on the primary system, based on some other things. Maybe they have other things going on in their lives. Do you feel like we are stuck with leaders who aren't very good because of the system, or because the system is making it, which is chicken or the egg? Are they not running? Are we not getting a chance to really hear from them?
Well, I think it's both. And frankly, to me, the root cause is the parties. The parties used to nominate qualified people. They really did. I mean, whether your side won or lost, I mean, when Reagan was running against Mondale, was one of those two guys a bum? Of course not. They were both worthy individuals, and you favored one or you favored the other, and that was legitimate. But the parties nominated qualified people. When Clinton was running against Bush, the same was true. It's not like you have to go back into ancient history, but if you want to, think about Eisenhower versus Adlai Stevenson. Could you have had two more distinguished candidates? The parties used to know how to do their job. They no longer do, or they would rather not. And I think that's the kernel of the problem.
You have written about Ross Perot. Ross Perot was a different person, very different, unique individual, a businessman who obviously had a different way of looking at things, focusing on his charts and his graphs and whatnot. Had a major impact on that election. Is that what it's going to take, as opposed to no label sounds terrific to a lot of us who are in the middle and are thinking, all right, let's find some pragmatism here. But is it going to take someone with electricity to then generate perhaps a group like a No Labels to want to work with that person? How feasible is that these days? Is that actually harder today than it would have been in 1992?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, is it? I'll answer your question with a question. Is that the premise of the RFK candidacy? It's not like he has any political background. There were certainly people who were on a No Labels shortlist without political backgrounds, although all the founders of No Labels had deep political backgrounds, so there may have been an unintended bias there. I don't know, but there were four-star admirals and generals who were under possible consideration, and most of them, one of them notably, described himself as dead center in terms of political, and he had never run for anything. And I think those would have been very credible candidates. You can think of somebody like a Jamie Dimon. Zero political experience, but a vast amount of world experience and knowledge. So I think those would have been very credible people as well. And I don't think they were being rejected, and I don't think that they should be rejected as potential candidates. I think the Trump experience has not been a good one, in terms of having somebody with no political background becoming the president of the United States. But he was not, I mean, frankly, real estate developers are not the same as people who, four-star generals or people who run major financial institutions that give them a lot of exposure to a lot of things that are very, very important to the world. So I wouldn't rule that out at all, but neither would I rule out that there are millions. Well, millions is a wild exaggeration. So there are a whole lot of worthy Republicans and Democrats and politically active independents who deserve serious consideration for the White House, and they didn't get it. And the initial problem with that is the parties wouldn't consider them.
Were you ultimately disappointed that No Labels was not able to close the deal, as it were, to get some of these people to actually commit to run?
Oh, deeply, deeply. I mean, I've devoted, I'm not here to be a martyr, but I devoted the last 2 years of my life to this. You know what it takes to write a book. And the book was written about a purple presidency. We're not going to get that. A lot of good causes fail on their first try, and maybe they reveal something about a better way to go. And I'm racking my brain about that, and I'm certainly not alone in that. And maybe something good will come of it. But it was a huge disappointment. And I know it was a huge disappointment to the people who were internally active. Think of me as sort of externally active in No Labels, but the people who were in the fray day in and day out, some real quality people, for heaven's sakes. And they've devoted a couple of years of their life to this as well. So, yes, I mean, it would be hard to describe this as anything other than a great disappointment.
It sort of harkens back to one of my earlier questions. Are we going to somehow potentially, regardless of whether Biden or Trump wins, as long as our system survives in 2027, are we just going to presumably, if you were to look into a very fuzzy crystal ball, are we looking at a situation where, we luck into, and I say luck into because just a different generation of candidates, different sort of people, not the same two that we've been subjected to these last couple of elections. Are we going to luck into a Nikki Haley versus Gavin Newsom, or a situation where people will disagree about policies and ideas, but ultimately will most likely agree on facts and they can disagree about the priorities? How fearful are you about how bumpy the next 2, 3, 4 years can be?
Oh, it will be terribly bumpy, I suspect. The best hope is that you have divided government, at least one branch of one House of Congress, if not both, that are on the opposite party of the prevailing presidential candidate. But whether you have that or not, I mean, a number of these problems, when people are talking about a $7+ trillion budget, not talking about proposing a $7+ trillion budget for fiscal year 2025, which starts in just a few months. It starts at the end of September. No one can look at America's, the country's current financial situation with its rapidly growing debt, with $2 trillion deficits. There simply isn't a rational position for saying that can be absorbed. It's just intolerable. When you have people like Paul Krugman, who are starting to get very scared and are talking down modern monetary theory and other gauzy covers for the notion that, wildly excessive spending is going to be just fine. If Krugman's against it, I don't know who's out there who could be for it. Larry Summers came out, a Democratic, a very prominent and very deservedly prominent Democratic economist, came out with very, very fearful projections with some of the Biden's early spending, and every one of them was borne out that the inflation would spike and we would need to raise interest rates and the budget would be a terrible mess. And I mean, Larry was right and the Biden administration was wrong. These things are not sustainable for any period of time, certainly not for 4 more years. So, to address the core of your question, I think we will have very different candidates and a very different public attitude coming 2028 for the simple reason that it will be visible to everybody, to a blind man in a snowstorm, that the situation is unsustainable and we need major change.
That is C. Owen Papke. He is the author of The Purple Presidency, and we've been talking about the state of America at this point with the presidential candidates we're going to end up with. Owen, thanks for checking in. I appreciate the conversation.
Steve, my pleasure as always.
And that's all for this edition of the AZ Politicast podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you want to hear some of my past editions, I'd love to get your feedback on those as well. Just go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and search for AZ Politicast. You can also Google AZ Politicast to find the episodes there as well. Music for this podcast provided by Epidemic Sound. Thanks again to my guest, Owen Papke, author of The Purple Presidency. I'm Steve Goldstein.